All right, good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright, Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Monday, 15th of May, 2023. Welcome not to those in the public gallery, as we have none, but welcome to those watching the live stream at home via YouTube. It's 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respect to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Dean, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Acting Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Basham, Director of the Environment, Development and Community Services, Dr Fox, Acting Manager Finance, Ms Eaton, Manager in Environmental Services, Ms Quinn, our Strategic Planner, Mr Stander, Coordinator of Environmental Planning, Ms Denexter, Communications and Engagement Support Officer, Ms Klein, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. Apologies this evening. We have Mayor Councillor Paula Reet and Councillor Fox, both of whom have an approved leave of absence. Confirmation of minutes. That the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 8 held on the 1st of May 2023 be confirmed as a true record. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved Councillor Street, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. The ayes have it. Workshops held since last Council Meeting. On the 8th of May, we had a workshop on the Local Government Review. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor or staff member have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to declare an interest in 16.3 Gormley Park facilities, and on the advice of the General Manager, I will stay in the room and vote on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Nope. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session? Questions without notice from the public. There are no members in the public. Questions on notice from the public. If you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had one question on notice from the public, bushfire risk and evacuation plan from Professor Michael Rowan, and an officer's response from Meg Lorang. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Got Councillor Cordover, then Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Two lines of questioning from me. So the first line of questioning is about tree removal in Blackmans Bay. It's come to my attention that a tree that had previously been nominated for inclusion in the Kingborough Significant Tree Register has been felled at the top end of Bluebush Crescent in Blackmans Bay, and I realise, as many as some other councillors will be aware, that there's a long and complex history with that area, and if I understand correctly, there's been some indication that in years gone by, council has actually tried to protect a large white gum in the area and have public open space to allow for pedestrian linkages, etc. And a long story short, it appears, if I understand correctly, that this tree was only protected for a period of 10 years, before the developer was granted permission to demolish it. My questions are as follows. What measures do we now have in place to ensure that the processing of significant tree nominations is adequately resourced and completed in a timely manner? That's my first question.
Mr Stander.
Through you, Chair, thank you for that question. I think it's one of those areas within council that is truly under-resourced. The last update that we undertook, it involved a lot of work, consulting with landowners, going through the whole planning scheme amendment process, and we've updated the list, and it's most probably not something that you can do on a monthly basis, possibly something that we can do at a yearly basis. I guess it will come down to how many nominations we receive and when we call for nominations. So at this point in time, I don't think we've got any new nominations. However, we are working as a group to look at ways that when we receive nominations that we can process it, even if it's just to list it on our planning scheme to say we've received the nomination, so staff and the members of the public can have a look at that. The formal process of listing it obviously is a little bit more involved. It takes up to 12 months to do that. So there will always be that period from the nomination when it's received to getting in the planning scheme that will take some work.
Thank you. A follow-up question, if I may, through you, Acting Mayor, is what steps do we think can be taken to improve that consultation process with landowners to ensure that significant trees are listed appropriately and that landowners, I guess, are aware of the gravitas of having a tree that is possibly significant on their property? Do you have any ideas around that education piece?
Mr. Stander.
Through your chair, I'll try and answer that one. Yes, it's something that we've discussed at the commission last hearing we had with them was to have a set of information packs that we want to send out to property owners who's got a listed tree on the property. And as part of council's, just operational functions, we also want to provide that information to landowners. In saying that, I always encourage landowners, if they don't know, ring us. We can provide some advice, even if it's just to come out to the property. You know, we often get inquiries from people that say they're worried about the tree, the risk involved with the tree or branches going to fall down. We provide that service that we do go out and provide that initial discussions and guide people in the right direction to address those issues.
Thank you. Final couple of questions on this through you, Acting Mayor, is if my understanding is correct of our...
I'm called over, sorry. I just a message from the team. We're having a bit of trouble with the video. The audio is working, but the team are working on it in the background there, so we'll continue on.
Sure, thank you for that. So I am kind of looking for assurance, and I know that this is on councillors to update the significant tree policy in such a way that it is more robust, if that's indeed how we feel as a majority. I want to be assured that it actually does provide the proper protection to similarly important landmark trees in our community as this one that has just been lost, and that those that the register will actually be upheld. So to that end, I'm thinking about what actions can be taken to improve monitoring and enforcement of conditions that protect significant trees in planning permits. Now, if I understand our register correctly, it's that currently if someone nominates a tree, during the process that it takes for that nomination to be processed, somebody who owns the tree or is nearby the tree can actually make an application to have that tree removed, which in that case I think makes those significant trees more vulnerable. If it takes up to 12 months and I say, okay, that's a significant tree, and then a developer has 12 months in which to destroy that tree, there's a kind of perverse incentive there to want to destroy trees after they've been nominated. So I'm concerned that there will be more demolition and lopping of significant trees whilst that process takes place. So when our significant tree register comes up for a review in September 2025, will council officers be recommending the inclusion of a provision for some type of injunction or interim intervention order whilst that process takes place so that if a tree is nominated during that 12 months, the tree can't be touched, and if we need to process that tree faster, then we should process that tree faster. But are we going to protect those trees during that process with some kind of interim injunction?
Mr. Nexter.
Through you, Acting Mayor, and Ms. Quinn and Mr. Stander may want to add to this. This gap that you've identified is a real gap, and there may be other provisions under the planning scheme which may require a permit for that tree removal, but it wouldn't be assessed as a significant tree under the planning scheme. Equally, there are a number of exemptions, and this is where the proposed tree bylaw actually is the instrument that has been, I guess, discussed by the council previously and is currently going through its process to fill that gap. So it would have provisions and be the mechanism to enable consideration of trees when they're in that in-between stage. I'm not aware of any other mechanism that we could do that by. We couldn't do it by the policy. We can't do it under the scheme. So that's the approach that we've taken, but that requires the bylaw to finish its process and be brought into effect, which, yeah.
Okay, thank you. And I'm happy to take this offline, but if there is a brief answer, I'd be interested to know why we can't do it in the policy. Like, why can't we strengthen the policy to add that idea of a stop? Why can't it be in the policy?
I believe it is in the policy in terms of the intention, but I don't believe the policy itself can require... Can introduce permit requirements and approval processes.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much for that. And I think it's one of those policy areas that we will be looking at closely. I think it's a great shame what's taken place here. So my second question through you, Acting Mayor, is about Appendix B of tonight's agenda. I'm thinking now about the current and ongoing minute resolutions open session, which appears on page 149 of our agenda. And the item is... It says entire home short stay accommodation, and this is from the meeting date 5 September 2022, so it's in response to a motion that I moved calling for a report into curbing or restricting whole dwelling short stay accommodation in Kingborough. And the note for the anticipated date of completion simply says 2023, but it doesn't say which month. May I please have some more specificity about when that report might be completed?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Cordova, I've received advice from the Local Government Association that at the next general meeting next month there will be a motion put forward from the association to address that very issue on a sector-wide basis. And as soon as I get further information on that, I'll distribute it to all councils.
Thank you. That's all.
Councillor Bain.
Yes, thank you, Acting Mayor. I have a question in relation to the General Manager's calendar, which is one of the attachments to the agenda papers. From the 28th of March, it was participated in online meeting Rita Derwent Ferry. Just wondering if there's any information that the GM can share from that one.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Bain, I'm part of a working group comprising the four Metropolitan Council GMs and the Executive Officer to the Greater Hobart Strategic Alliance, working on a proof of concept for the Derwent Ferry expansion. Councillors might recall that as a result of a joint submission to the Labor Party in the lead up to the recent federal election last year, $20 million was committed to further expand the very successful Derwent Ferry. The state government have also committed, in effect, a matching $19 million, and in conjunction with the Department of State Growth, we're working on a proof of concept to expand the service.
Thank you.
Next I had Councillor Midgley, then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A couple of questions relating to the new amenities block to be built across the road from the Longley Hotels. Excuse me, I cannot remember what that is up to, even though I did read the Development Services report last meeting. I'm wondering, I've had a request from a community member if there could be PowerPoints suitable for e-bikes, noting it's a popular e-bike route in that area. Excuse me, not sending that prior as well.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we'll have to take that question on notice. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There was a matter, I was an apology for the last KBAC meeting, Kingborough Bicycle Advisory meeting, and noted that there was a comment about the bike racks were removed at the Kingborough Hub. I understand they were quite high and you had to lift up your bike, and it was even hard for myself to do that with my e-bike. Are they going to be replaced at the Kingborough Hub?
Dr. Fox.
Through you, Acting Mayor. My understanding is that we have got some quotes on reinstalling the bike racks in a better location, so there's better accessibility and visibility. We're just finalising that now, and we should have those back in place as soon as we can.
Great, thank you. My final question, noting in the reference that Councillor Cordova just mentioned regarding the outcomes and things like that. The speed limit on Woodbridge Hill, noting that that was the 6th of June 2022. I think the community's been quite patient in waiting for that one. We're nearly June 2023. I guess I'm just wondering how come this process takes so long. I know it's not on our behalf, but
Mr. Reed.
Thank you.
Through your acting mayor, yes, it is a little bit frustrating, particularly as one of the other ones that was on the list, which was Redwood Road, was a fairly quick turnaround. So we are in the lap of the officers looking at it from Department of State Growth. They have looked at it and they've made some preliminary findings, but they were not quite clear in terms of how they're actually going to proceed with it in terms of a lowering of the speed limit, what that speed limit might be lowered to, and that's the bit we're still waiting for. Happy to actually chase it back up with them and see if I can move it along a little bit faster.
Thank you.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. Just a couple of questions, like Councillor Bain, about the General Manager's activities. The first one was the 29th of March, where it says, in company with the Mayor, GM met with Mr. Michael Crosby, Head of Public Affairs at Airbnb. So I'm just wondering if there's anything, one, to report on that. And then just a broader question, too, about those types of meetings that here. Do they ever get minuted and therefore shared to us as councillors or the wider public?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. They don't get minuted as such, but both the Mayor and I are very keen to ensure that any meeting of that type is in fact placed on the Council agenda so that it's on the public record. That particular meeting was in fact just a meet and greet, but it is fair to say that they have a certain view of the importance of Airbnbs. In answer to an earlier question tonight from Councillor Cordova, I've indicated that the Local Government Association is seeking to get a whole of sector position on short stay accommodation, and as soon as I get further information on that motion, I'll distribute it to all councillors.
Are there any further questions without notice from councillors?
Sorry, is that a couple more?
Councillor Dean.
The follow-up to that is the 31st of March, and recognising that it was the Acting General Managers who was in charge of this one, but there was a meeting with Simon Tamlin from SeaLink to discuss options for queuing at Bruny Island Ferry. I know that's a very hot button topic for people in the community, so I wonder if there was any positive outcomes from that discussion.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I guess what Simon was trying to do was just look at what options we might have in terms of any property we might have in the area there. He was noticing the Kettering Tennis Courts and wanting to see if that was a possibility to actually use that, which we said no. However, we did look at some other potential options we might actually have, and I guess from his perspective, he'd been tasked by DSG to try and find what options could be available just for alleviating some of that queuing there by allowing people to actually find a site, a large enough site for them to, if you like, have a ticket and sort of park their car there and move it out of the way of the backing up the Channel Highway. So I don't know that we actually came up with any particular solutions at the meeting there, but at least we were happy to have the discussion.
Councillor Dean, further
sure.
question?
Yeah, and just the last one. It's just a general question. I know Metro TAS have been cancelling services for months now that have impacted, you know, people all over Hobart, but Kingborough is not immune to that. Last week, you know, and as a family with just one car and we share a lot, I'm constantly trying to get to places for my son on the bus, and couldn't get to Kingston because there was a three-hour window where there was not a single bus service to get to Kingston. So I'm just wondering, have we in the past, given this has been going on for quite a few months now, lobbied Metro TAS, or has been any communication from us as a council, given that it's not just impacting residents trying to get about their daily life, but, you know, in that instance, you know, I normally take my son out for to buy to eat or something. So it's actually our businesses too that are getting impacted. So I'm just wondering if we have made any communications recently.
Mr. Arnold.
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. I have a regular meeting with the CEO of Metro TAS, and the most recent one was a few weeks ago. I raised that issue and I was advised that they were going through a major recruitment phase
that they did have, they acknowledged they had a shortage of drivers for a whole host of reasons. Some have been well publicised in the media, but they were hopeful that over the next few months the situation would see significant improvement as new recruits come on board. I'm not personally aware of the licensing requirements for bus drivers or etc., but I would hope that that is the case, not just for Kingborough residents, but the Greater Hobart.
So would it be in, I guess, a correct assumption that these cancellations are, you know, going to be for a few more months at least? Is that what you gain from those meetings?
Mr. Arnold.
Yeah, through your acting mayor. I gained the distinct impression that they were acutely aware of the problem, were working on it, but there was no short-term fix.
Are there any further questions? Moving on to questions on notice from councillors, there were no questions on notice from councillors. Open session adjourns now, and the planning authority commences at 5:50 p.m. We are on page 5, officers' reports to the planning authority. PSA-2022-3, amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to update the incorporated documents. There's a recommendation on page 8, and I'd like to just point out a spelling error, if I may. At B, I think we're resolving, not revolving. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Do I have a mover? Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I am really happy to move this tonight, and I'd like to start by remembering that this proposed amendment does not introduce new development standards or policies, but it's rather to update the list of supplementary documents of Council's open public space contribution policy and biodiversity offset policy to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme. So it's about updating the documents. And both of these policies had input for community consultation when they were developed. This report is in regards to the Council decision on November 21st, 2022, regarding the update of these policies as mentioned. And as part of this update, Council was required to do a 28-day exhibition period as per the statutory requirements. As the report says, the Tasmanian Commission requested that this of Council due to community interest in this matter. It was advertised along the following guidelines regarding the TPC on the website twice in the Mercury and also available at the Kingborough Council Customer Service Centre and on Bruny Island. During this exhibition period, as noted in the report, there were 13 representations received. They are attached to this report and I read them thoroughly. And as I read over the representations and then again the officer's conclusion and summary in that, I wholeheartedly agree with the comments. And I just read the comments out that the representations generally raised issues with the policy content and merit rather than updating and referencing of the incorporation of the policies into the planning scheme. And that's the decision we're making tonight and that's the decision that we made in November. The representations have not raised matters that require changes to initiated scheme amendment, nor does it provide sufficient grounds to recommend to the TPC not to proceed with the amendment. And so just to note as well that all the representatives will be invited to attend the hearings of the TPC once they make their final decision around that. And so you know, if they feel like their representations haven't been heard, they can make further amendment, further comment and input to that. But I put the officer recommendations. I supported wholeheartedly as well the biodiversity offset policy when it was put forward and the public open space policy. They have been put through public scrutiny and contribution at that time, and this is about incorporating these documents. So I look forward to hearing other colleagues' comments.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli, then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to move a procedural motion to discuss aspects of the report. I'd like to get some feedback from the fellow councillors as well.
Do I have a seconder? Seconded by Councillor Richardson. We're now in discussion. Councillor Antoli. Oh, we have to vote. Sorry. Yeah. So the motion is to move to discuss. It was moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Richardson. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against?
Yes.
We have a division. All those in favour, please, raise your hand. It's Councillor Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street and Gladewright. And against is Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Thank you, colleagues. And I'd like to just kick off and really encourage some of you to share. When we went to the TPC back in November and we asked them to go ahead and not consider going to public exhibition on that, at that time there were only two councillors who voted against not going to exhibition. That was myself and Councillor Richardson, with I believe Councillor Street being absent. We felt at the time that it was in the public interest to go to public consultation. The TPC has sided with myself and Councillor Richardson. We've now gone to consultation and we've received a relatively large representation from people on what probably should be a minor administrative matter, and it appears that we're being asked to not consider the majority of the representations because they don't specifically talk about the amendments. 2 out of 13 do, 11 don't. The bulk talk about issues with the policy, with a huge number talking about how the policy never went to consultation, even though the TPC is demanding the amendments go to consultation. And so the public is saying, why should we be happy with an amendment to a policy that we're not happy about? Because the TPC has recognised it's in the public interest that consultation should have happened. And there are conflicts within this report that say, yes, consultation has happened, but other officers have said no. When the policy was first brought in 2010, it never happened. So I'm confused why we are... I would like some discussion and support about why we should throw out those representations as not being relevant or not being worthy of discussion, given that they fall in line with what the TPC predicted and what myself and Councillor Richardson predicted. And I'd like to get some feedback from my colleagues on their thoughts as well.
Further comments? Councillor Dean.
Could I just maybe have someone from staff clarify, because I'm hearing two different things here, one from Councillor Midgley that this did go out to public consultation back in 2021 and 2022 regarding this, both these policies, but I'm also hearing from my colleague Councillor Antoli that they didn't go out to public consultation, so could we just potentially have clarified at that point? Thanks.
Mr. Stander.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, there are two different issues at hand here. So it's the review of the policies itself, and then there's the planning scheme amendment. So we had a planning scheme amendment in 2021 to update the incorporated documents in the planning scheme. That went through the statutory process of seeking input from the community. So during that period, we didn't receive any submissions from the public. The policies itself, they weren't subject to, I guess, public consultation. When we reviewed those policies, the biodiversity policy itself did undergo a level of consultation, but it is considered more technical input on that document. And I guess the main reason why it didn't go through that consultation or full consultation process is because we've had those two policies in the planning scheme for a number of years. It actually predates the 2015 planning scheme. And there's also, I guess, the fact is that the previous planning scheme, or the current planning scheme, 2015 planning scheme, when it was introduced in Kimbra, it was part of public consultation. So in a way, one could argue that once that planning scheme was introduced, there was opportunity for members of the public to raise concerns with that. So really, to come back to it, it's a policy or two policies that we've had since 2015, even before that. And really what we're trying to do with the scheme amendment is to update referencing to the most recent documents. So as you know, procedural requirements through council, we have a number of policies that we update. Some of them are being updated every 3 years. Council can call for policy to be updated. The difficulty that we have at the moment is the planning scheme is referring to outdated documents, so it makes sense to update that. So we do recognise there's concerns about the policies, but I feel that's a slightly different issue to the planning scheme amendment.
Councillor Dean?
So the interim planning scheme that we're currently under is applying the previous iterations of both of those policies. Okay. I guess from my perspective, just to highlight one of your comments there, that we as councillors can bring forth a review of a certain policy if we so wish, which is obviously good to hear. I think that's probably where some councillors are leaning towards. But my view on this one is that very much this is a procedural thing, and if we weren't to pass this tonight, then it's potentially undoing previous council decisions and reviews that happened last year and the year before. And I wholeheartedly appreciate that in response to the comments, despite them potentially not being necessarily relevant to this procedural side, that the council staff have still provided comments in response to those, which were very, as Councillor Midgley probably alluded to, very useful for me as well. So I will end up, when we come out of discussion, continue to support this on those points that I've made. So thank you for clearing those points up.
Councillor Antoli, your light was on first, and then Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to understand what the consequences are if we vote against the amendments. There are two representations made specifically about the amendments. An answer was given. In my view, the answers probably didn't really address the intent or what the person was trying to ask, but I don't have the full context. So let's say that we're not comfortable and we want to vote against the amendments. What is the net effect of that?
Mr. Stander.
Through Acting Mayor, in the scenario that the planning authority tonight decide not to proceed with the planning scheme amendment, it will be a recommendation to the Tasmanian Planning Commission, so they will ultimately make that decision whether it proceeds or not. I guess if the commission decides they don't want to incorporate the two most recent versions of the policies in the planning scheme will still continue to operate with the outdated versions of the biodiversity policy as well as the public open space contribution policy.
Thank you. I might have misheard you. Did you just say, and I probably did mishear you, so please help me understand, did you just say that if we vote against it, it'll still go to the TPC?
Correct.
So how does that work? We vote against not including the amendments, and the amendments will still go to the TPC to be included? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Through Acting Mayor, Council's decision tonight will be a recommendation to the Commission, so Council don't have the final say in this matter. It can only make a recommendation to the Tasmanian Planning Commission.
So if we vote against the including these changes, Council is still going to put forward the policy with the changes included, even though Council, as acting as PA, will vote against it. Now, I've missed something. How does that work?
Mr. Arnold, can someone help
clarify?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. If I'm incorrect here, I'm sure my colleague will correct me, but my understanding, Councillor Antoli, is that what Mr. Stander is conveying is that if the Council were to determine tonight that it now no longer supports the amendment, then the amendment would be conveyed to the TPC with the council decision, but the amendment would not be changed. Does that make it clear to you?
No, because if we are the directors of this council and we decide we don't want to vote for an amendment going forward to recommendation to the TPC, one would think it doesn't go forward. If I'm on the board of directors and my CEO wants to do something and the board says no and the CEO goes ahead and does it, that's normally called insubordination. So I'd like someone to help me understand where I'm wrong.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Antoli, we are required to go through a legislative process, and that process requires us to bring this matter, this amendment, back to Council after it's been through the public exhibition phase. Council then has two options available to it. It can can support the recommendation that the office has put forward for the reasons outlined in the report, or it can oppose that recommendation. If it opposes that recommendation, then Mr. Standar is still duty-bound by the legislation to return the amendment as exhibited for the public exhibition period with the council decision on the amendment.
Okay, so you're saying, therefore, the council is not the final arbitrator, it's the TPC, is basically what you're saying.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that is correct.
Right, okay, thank you. No, I appreciate your patience. I just generally wanted to understand these are esoteric issues in the main. I'm finished with my personal area of discussion. It was very helpful to get that back and forth, which is restricted when we're only asking questions without that sort of open forum, because this is a big issue, and for it to have gone to the TPC with Council's recommendation to be knocked back, it's not something that I want to jump into and vote for one way or the other without careful consideration.
Thank you. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. Excuse me. I just wanted to pick up on a point that you said about the consultation being of a technical nature. So in these responses, it says that the offset went through the full statutory requirements, including formal public exhibition. So when the biodiversity offset policy was taken as from a convention into a policy and was made as part of what we do, whenever that was there a point in time that that policy went to public exhibition and the public was allowed to give their opinion on that policy?
Mr. Stander.
Through Acting Mayor, I might actually ask Mr. Nexit to help me with this one, but my understanding is the policy itself didn't go through that formal consultation process when it was developed. However, when the new interim planning scheme came into force, there was a consultation period, so people had the opportunity to come and have a look at what is in the planning scheme and also to have a look at other supporting documents, including the incorporated documents. So I guess in the general sense, if the members of the community had a concern with that particular policy, that was most probably the point in time to raise those concerns. So I don't know if there's any other consultation prior to that that was undertaken.
Mr. Nexter.
Through you, Acting Mayor. No, there wasn't. And the only thing I would add to that is that the policy had been in effect through the previous scheme in the lead up to 2015, so it was a policy that had been out in the community and was operational for 5 or so years before the interim scheme was advertised. So it wasn't that it was being brought in when it would had absolutely no sense of it and hadn't experienced it yet, but the response provided by Mr. Stander is correct. The policy hasn't been put out separately for consultation. That was certainly discussed, in my understanding, and councillors and other staff members may want to correct me, that was discussed at a workshop with councillors when we were reviewing the policy, what was the scope of consultation that was appropriate. And because the two reviews that have occurred to the policy were around changing definitions and clarifying technical matters as opposed to revisiting the entire scope of the policy, what it's about and establishing the groundwork, that informed why the consultation at that point was technical in nature.
Councillor Richardson.
Okay, thank you. So when we last inquired about this, we were also told that there has been, if we wanted a review, there would need to be some evidence that it was that it was unpopular, and I would suggest that given that the first opportunity that the public has to make comment on this, although it be deemed not relevant, that we've got 11 out of 13 representations that are about that policy, I would suggest that that warrants enough evidence to warrant a review.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just had a question in relation to some of the discussion here. When we move to the statewide planning scheme and we have these attachments which are, I guess, specific to Kimbra, will they be part of the, I guess, consultation to move to the statewide planning scheme?
Mr. Stander.
Through Acting Mayor, there's actually two answers to that question. First of all, the Tasmanian planning scheme is the I guess the main purpose of that is to have a consistent approach across the state. So the planning scheme itself won't refer to specific documents unless it's documents that will be applied across the state. So there's opportunity for council, as potentially as part of specific area plans, to refer to our own documents. I'm not specifically talking about the policies and so forth. But I guess that's a matter to be tested by the Commission, whether they would allow us to do that. So, for example, if Council want to introduce a specific area plan and want to have reference to those policies, we can certainly try and refer to that. However, that decision will be made by the Commission. So I guess what we're trying to do with this planning scheme is to preempt the scenario where we want to use that. The planning scheme, or the Tasmanian planning scheme, will refer to the ability of councils to apply, for instance, offsets. It won't refer to a specific document as such unless council introduced it as part of a specific area plan. So I think I've got it correct. I might just have to check with my colleague.
Mr. Nexter.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Bain. Any further comments or questions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I just wanted to note that I did state community consultation, and that sort of came from reading into the report, but noting that community consultation can vary and can be contextual, I guess. But from what I'm hearing from the officers, that there has been community, has had opportunity to have input into these policies from various times over the time period they've been available. Is that correct? Like, I guess, you know, community engagement just means so many different contexts, and I guess, can I really be I've heard that the community has had opportunities previously to make input into these policies. Is that correct?
Mr. Nexter.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, that is correct.
Further questions or comments? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So, ultimately, I think that the recommendation here is a positive step forward. The amendment aims to update the reference of the current endorsed versions of the Kingborough Public Open Space and the Biodiversity Offset Policy. I have said on numerous occasions that I think our biodiversity policy should be strengthened, and I tried to move amendments to strengthen it so that it will be, somewhere around 10 times the... It would have, I guess, 10 times the implication that it currently has in order to protect biodiversity in Kingborough and make sure that biodiversity offsets are used indeed as they are intended, as a last resort, rather than as a cost of doing business for developers. Having said all that, it's important to note, as Councillor Midgley pointed out initially, that this planning scheme amendment does not seek to review or update those policies, but rather to update the listing and the reference of the current endorsed versions of the two policies in the planning scheme. One of the reasons why I didn't necessarily think it was... I think this has been an edifying discussion, but we probably could have done it just in the general... we could have asked questions. Oh, just as a point of clarity, in discussion, can we talk multiple times, or we just get one opportunity to speak and one question? No, we can talk multiple times.
Multiple times, yeah.
So that's good, and I might avail myself of that opportunity if I feel the need, but having said that, I do largely feel like this is essentially, I don't want to use the word procedural in nature, but it's essentially pretty prosaic, isn't it? It's kind of a step-by-step thing. And ultimately, as we've heard, the ultimate arbiter in this occasion will be the TPC. So it isn't us. And I do think that if councillors want to raise a point about that, they certainly can. They can certainly also, when we're not acting as a planning authority, they can bring a motion to the council and do all those kinds of advocacy roles and use the platform that they have to advocate. On this occasion, I'm still sticking with the idea that it's a positive step forward. It's, I don't want to use the word necessary, but it's very much a prosaic, procedural kind of thing where council could, if we so chose, we could be... advocates, but I think that there are probably better opportunities to be advocates than right now. So I am still in support of the motion. Thanks.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. My last comment before, if you'd like to move back into the consideration, is when we met as council on the 19th of December in 2022, when we discussed the policy itself, I mentioned that I was concerned to hear from the environmental planner present that back in 2010 there was no community consultation done at all. And I said, I quote, "I'm very concerned that it didn't go through formal consultation, and that's probably part of the reason why it's so profoundly unpopular with the people that were affected by it. How do we go with a policy that there is a concern that it's unpopular and it didn't undergo community consultation at its birth? How can it be reviewed?" And the manager, Environmental Services, answered, or didn't answer, by saying, "I think to consider that we need actually some evidence that the policy is unpopular." And that was touched on by Councillor Richardson a moment ago, because here we are wanting people to comment about an esoteric little procedural amendment to a policy, and 86% of the people who responded attacked the policy. And it's profoundly unpopular. And so it's important for us to understand why we got such a large response to not the question. And I think we need to take that into consideration. It's ironic that the TPC and their ivory tower have picked up on the sentiment, and we as councillors haven't. And I think that's what's so important about it. So I'm personally struggling with saying yes to an amendment that two people responded to didn't like, and 11 others responded to the whole policy didn't like, and I don't feel like I want to be backing that. And so that was helpful to get that information and feedback now, and I appreciate my peers indulging us and myself in that discussion, because I learnt a few things there that was very helpful.
Thank you, Councillor Rontoli. I would also argue that these policies are also profoundly popular. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. And I was going to touch on that point, that what we're looking at here is 13 submissions, so we could say 87% of people think this or 87% of people think that. But when you're looking at 13 submissions, I would make the contradistinction there that when the tree bylaw was going through this council, we received something like 183 submissions that were in favour of protecting it. So I think we potentially need to be careful there. But I really wanted to draw everyone's attention to 4.5 in the report on page 2 that says, even though the planning scheme amendment is only to update a reference to the most recent version of the two policies in the planning scheme, 11 of the 13 representations are also about the concerns people have with the biodiversity policy in general. The concerns with the policy are not a matter for consideration as part of the planning scheme amendment. However, council officers in attachment 1 also address those matters for completeness and will consider these in future policy reviews. So I do feel like that is... I think that is... I read that in good faith. I take it in good faith that we are actually listening to the community, and when the community... Because I fundamentally believe that consultation is a really important part of this and every other process that council does, because we need to be transparent, we need to be accountable, and we need to make sure that we're accurately and adequately representing our community. But I do think that the fact that even though these submissions, some of them were out of scope, the fact that council officers have undertaken to consider those when they are in scope, I think is a positive step as well. So I just wanted to add that context. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. I'm hoping that someone will move to put the motion soon. Would anybody like to do so? Councillor Street.
And I'll second that, yeah.
Okay. We are now voting on whether to move to put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And against? Motion is carried. So we're now back on the substantive recommendation, which is on page 8. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against?
Against.
We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Bain, Midgley, Street and Gladewright. And against is Councillor Antoli and Councillor Richardson. The motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session recommences at 6:20 p.m. Page 25, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Officers' reports to Council. Audit Panel Chair, there's a recommendation on page 26. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to seek to extend the appointment of the current Chair of the Audit Panel, Paul McTaggart, for a further four-year term. So the Audit Panel is governed by charter, and under that charter the Council appoints an independent member as the chairperson of the panel, which is what we're doing now. Paul has had two terms on the panel, one as an external member and one as the chair. He's got extensive experience, he's been doing an excellent job chairing the meetings during his four-year term, and he also interacts well with both internal and external auditors to ensure they're meeting their commitments to the Council. That's from the report, and from my brief experience on the audit panel, I totally agree. He's been doing an excellent job, so I'm happy to support the recommendation that Paul McTaggart be given a further four-year term as chair of the audit panel.
Thank you. Councillor Cordover, then Councillor Antoli.
Thanks very much, Acting Mayor.
Okay.
And I just wanted to say that I also support the motion, and I think the reasons are best explained in 4.1 through 4.3 of the report. The extensive experience that Paul has in risk management, audit and governance, as well as a good understanding of the meetings procedures and good interaction with both internal and external auditors, ensuring that their commitments to Council are met. And I further acknowledge that succession planning and good governance means that by providing this further term on the panel, it will allow those newer independent members more time to develop their knowledge to be a potential candidate for chair in the future, which will ensure, hopefully, a smooth transition in years to come. Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Cordover. Councillor Dean.
Very supportive. Just one question, though, being a newbie. Is this something that we normally advertise, or is it just a position that is standard that we just roll it over?
Mr. Arnold. Oh, Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Acting Chair. So essentially, if we didn't go down this particular track, we would advertise the role. We would advertise for a independent member to replace Mr. McTaggart, and then we would come back with a recommendation to Councillor in regards to a chair for the committee.
Councillor Dean.
So it's not actually stipulated in the charter that we have to advertise. We've got the discretion, obviously, to
through your acting chair. So the charter does allow the council to make decisions accordingly. So it's just a recommendation through the council.
Further comments or questions? Councillor Bain, would you like to sum up? If not, I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. Page 27, Kingborough Community Safety Committee Minutes, 17th of April 2022. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Cordover. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the main purpose of this report is to present a motion adopted by the Kingborough Community Safety Committee requesting the State Government Transport Division give adequate attention to the line markings within Kingborough. This has come about as the Safety Committee members have noted that line markings on local roads are often faded and not fit for purpose and are an ongoing safety hazard. And they've sent a message during the meetings that they'd like to see Council commit to increasing the budget for this and doing more about it. However, we have this grey area where there's a long-standing arrangement that the Tasmanian Government provides for the renewal of road line marking, but it's not actually a legislated responsibility. So they would like Council to take some action on that, and the recommendation is that Council notes the minutes of the Kingborough Community Safety Committee and submits a motion at the next LEGAP General Meeting requesting advocacy on behalf of the Councils to have a road line marking responsibilities legislated and additional funding provided by the State Government. So I guess the intention of this advocacy would be for the State Government to increase the funding for line marking on local government roads, and to more clearly define the roles and responsibilities of State Government and Councils within the legislative frameworks available. Very happy to support the recommendation and look forward to hearing further discussion from around the table.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Not much further discussion from me except to say that I have had extensive conversations with constituents about this particular issue for
Kingborough, we have a lot of roads that where there is some deficit in line marking, and I've even had constituents threaten to do it themselves. So we've had to talk them down from that. That I support the advocacy, the call for to get more done on this issue, and I'm surprised often by, I guess, the back and forth that it takes and the delays that we've seen from the state government. As we heard from my esteemed colleague, there are many areas where it presents a safety hazard not to have it, and also that, for me, it's also about the, not just for cars, but it's also about encouraging this, the safe uptake of public transport and active transport, which will greatly benefit by having a more, I guess, a more robust rollout of line marking throughout Kingborough. So more power to us to get something done here, and I thank the Safety Committee for bringing it to us. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Yes, as Chair of the Safety Committee, we have a lot of passionate committee members who are really keen to see this sorted out. One thing I've learned, we've been discussing a lot about line markings, is that capital funds can only be expended on projects for which an asset is created, and line markings can't be capitalised. So therefore, the line marking has to come out of our operational budget, which causes a big challenge for council. And because the arrangement between state government and council hasn't been legislated, is this who pays for it, who pays for it, who pays for it dynamic. And so it'd be really good to get LGAT to support advocacy to make this a bit clearer. Any other further comments or questions? If not, I'll put the motion, or would Councillor Bain like to sum up?
Yeah, just to sum up, just wanted to also thank the Kingborough Community Safety Committee for putting this forward, and I guess also noting that it's National Road Safety Week, so it's also very good timing. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Bain. I'll put the motion as printed on the screen as a recommendation on page 28, or it's there on your screen. It was moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, the motion is carried. Moving now to page 38, Gormley Park Facilities. There's a recommendation on page 40. I'm looking for a mover, Councillor Street, and a seconder, Councillor Dean. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. The facilities at Gormley Park have been known to us for some time as being substandard and in need of significant refurbishment, and that's why it was so great that we were able to commit funds for that purpose. Having said that, I think that the Little Athletics Club are really to be congratulated for coming back to us and saying, hang on a second, this might not actually work for us. And they appear to have done a power of work to show us how this project could be better enabled. And I think to steal a word from my colleague Councillor Cordova, it behoves us to hear that call and respond accordingly. So I'm really happy to support this recommended motion. Really impressed with the work that the Little Athletics Club have done, and they certainly have my full support to push ahead to try and better utilise the space that they've got. And the funding that we've got available for that purpose.
Thank you. Councillor Dean, then Councillor Antoli.
Yeah, fully support Councillor Street's comments there, and just want to add in a few things that if anyone's, you know, arguing about this, it obviously is a... it's a considerable shift going from what would have been in the short term some really nice upgrades, but, you know, the fact is we are... taking somewhat of a gamble in the hope that a master plan will be able to garner greater support. And I think one of the things that's really good about this proposal is that given the body of work that Councillor Street's alluded to there that the Athletics Club have done, I'm really hopeful that that will put us in a better position to be able to attract state and federal government funding. And when you think of the Commonwealth Games and Olympic Games that will be held in Australia in over the next 10 years, I think there's a really good opportunity to be able to attract that kind of money. But also just want to highlight a few other points, and the fact is that this is going to remain a multi-purpose facility. It won't be pigeonholed as only athletics, so that there will be capacity in winter to continue for the soccer club to be playing there. And the fact that it's obviously considering longer-term interests of the community is essential, and the fact is, well, it'd be obviously nice to improve them now. It would seem like a missed opportunity, given what's presented here in the report, if we were to go down the previous path and potentially cut ourselves a little bit short in the future. So, yeah, I absolutely support it and hope everyone else joins us.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. It's important to get a few things on the record as well so that the community understands why we're doing certain things. I likewise support it. I think it's fantastic. I have formed a professional relationship with the president of the Kingborough Little Athletics Centre through the Sports and Recreation Committee that Councillor Dean very successfully chairs, and he mentioned to me that Gormley Park is unable to take schools who have a population of 400 or more because it's so small and so ill-equipped. Now, that precludes or excludes the majority of the primary schools and the high school. So it's really important for us to make sure it's fit for purpose and that we're growing, that we're improving the facility. And likewise, what Councillor Street said, that well done for them to knock back some quick money for the long-term good and put it to the long-term use. So hats off to them as well. I have a procedural question, if I may, through you, Deputy Mayor. Councillor Cordova mentioned he has a conflict of interest, but will still be voting on, in the interest of transparency. How is it possible to have a conflict of interest and be able to vote, or is it not a conflict of interest at all? Was that a misword?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that's a determination for Councillor Cordova. Suffice to say, Councillor Antoli, I think Councillor Cordova once placed on the public record that in his capacity as a councillor, he is also a board member of Gymnastics Tasmania, which have an affiliation with the Kingborough Sports Precinct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Councillor Midgley, then Councillor Bain.
Thank you. I also echo the sentiments of my colleagues. It is my children have been involved in little athletics, and I was for many years during my life, that was my sport growing up, and I really congratulate them on the project initiation document that they've put forward. They're volunteers at this club working hard for the health and well-being of children and young people in our community, and some that I've been really lucky to watch from a little athletics person to now a national champion in some of their sports, and they've started at the Kingborough Little Athletics Club. So we can't say that we're not making this decision without informed information. It's really thorough and it looks like a great vision, and I hope that in the future that there is some spare cash left over. If some things don't go ahead, we might be able to put some money in other sports and realise that, you know, these community clubs are really important to consider, and it's great. I look forward to seeing the master plan.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I totally agree with the previous councillors that have spoken. I think it's fantastic that the Little Athletics have set aside the short term and looked at the bigger picture and the master plan. So I think it's pretty clear on the $50,000 that's going towards the master plan, the other $50,000 towards infrastructure. I guess I just have questions around the procedures for that, because it's, I guess there's a few details in here but not specifics. So what's the process in them being allocated the $50,000 and what they can spend it on? And is that like an approval process that comes through council, or are they just free to essentially spend it on what they think is necessary?
Thanks, Councillor Bain. I had similar questions. Mr. Basham.
Through you, Chair. The report does talk about that the additional $50,000 would be used for minor infrastructure projects. And in this case here, what they've identified is a throw cage, because their current process they use isn't sufficient. And from the information that I have, is that once they had engaged undertaking that process, that would be done via an invoice to council for council to fund that those funds.
Further question, Councillor Bain?
Yes, a just follow-up question. So if, for example, they were to get funding elsewhere for that throw cage and they still have $50,000 left, and do they get approval from council prior to purchasing, then submit an invoice, or what's the process?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Acting Chair. So essentially with this, what I think it's a matter of governance, we would enter into some sort of agreement with them. So we'd have something up front to say, OK, what are you going to spend the money on? If it's a throw cage, then clearly that would be documented. If they go down the track of something else, we would just make sure we've got, you know, a really clear agreement so that there's no misunderstanding between parties as to what is being proposed. So we do that.
OK, thank you. Just to say, no reason at all to doubt what they're going to spend the money on, but I think it's just good to have these processes in place.
Absolutely. Thank you. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I totally agree with Councillor Bain about having that probity. I think it's a really important aspect of this. I also just wanted to mention how it's worth actually taking a look at, in the public agenda here, at the business plan and the project initiation plan. I do support the Athletic Centre's request. And because that extensive plan does highlight a number of the things that could limit the capacity of the club were it not to reallocate these funds towards that master plan and to think in that kind of long-term way. And the reason why that's so important for all of us and not just the club is that given the population growth that we're seeing within the municipal area and the fact that athletics ranked as the fifth most popular recreational activity in Kingborough in 2022, it's reasonable to assume that the membership is likely to increase, and therefore the council should do all we reasonably can to make sure that that site remains fit for purpose or improves in line with population growth. And the proposal to reallocate those club rooms and expand the oval to provide a 400 metre running track is consistent both with our precinct site master plan and the precinct site master plan and the KSC precinct future directions plan. And so I think, as everyone's mentioned, this is a longer-term thought, and I think that's prudent to reallocate this funding in preparedness of future planning to meet the longer-term community needs. And I also just wanted to point out that they did also give a nod to sustainability, which I appreciated, that the initiation document provided indicates that the project will deliver a space that will balance the natural environment in a sustainable way, focusing on leading by example and delivering, as they say, a trim carbon footprint, inspiring athletes, officials and spectators to be responsible global citizens. So I liked how they even put that in, that they're going to try and be environmentally responsible, aligning with council's values as well. So I do thank Councillor Antolli further to that probity. It's worth mentioning that, yeah, I am on the board of Gymnastics Tasmania, and what we can see is that sport in general, these are providing the foundational building blocks for our community to thrive. It's improving our health and wellbeing. The money spent and invested in our sporting clubs is actually delivering benefits and dividends to all of us. And also it's that aspect that even though there are many roads throughout the municipality that I don't particularly drive on, I'm still proud to support those roads with our rates. I'm still proud to spend my money contributing to others because I know that it benefits all of us, and that's why so many people want to live in Kingborough, because we're a great place to live and we keep the community at the heart of everything we do. So the more that we encourage sport, the more that we encourage our clubs, the more that we encourage particularly young people to live a healthy, active lifestyle, the better off our society will become. And so I support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Would Councillor Street like to sum up? I'll put the motion. The recommendation is printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Dean. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, the motion is carried. Moving now to page 71, fees and charges, 2023-24. Recommendation on page 72. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain.
Thank you. This is probably not a popular one because we don't want to put up any fees and charges. But it is part of what we do in council. Well, excuse me, can I have a point of order? Because I don't think you can call out when someone is speaking. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Antolli, if you can just refrain from commenting until it's your turn. Thanks. Councillor Midgley.
but I'll be happy to hear the input from my fellow colleagues. I've sat on this council for, I think this is my fifth year, and noted that fees and charges over the years have been passed. It states that it is part of our long-term financial plan update, and we have discussed this in the budget workshop as well in regards to the percentage that they will be increased. And from recollection during those discussions at the budget workshops, that all councillors were aware of this. But again, I'm moving the motion and I'm happy to hear the input and debate and questions and comments from my fellow colleagues. Also on that, noting that there is a new fees and charges in there in regards to discussion with sporting clubs, and we were provided an email noting that the sporting clubs had input into that. I'm not entirely sure in regards to actually a final decision was made on that. Sorry, Councillor Gladewright looking at me, questioning. But again,
would you like that answered? That question?
I'm just sort of making a comment on that one, and then I'll sort of have a question. But I have been talking to another councillor, and I guess in regards to that, and it seems like the clubs have, there has been thorough consultation in regards to that. I guess, did the clubs know that it was going to be in the fees and charges, and actually that was certain to go ahead?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Chair. I've looked at Council's business records and there is communication with the clubs from January 2023, which shows the classification that they would fall in, being, for instance, large urban, medium urban, medium rural, and the sessional rates associated to that. And out of the 19 clubs that provided feedback out of the 19 clubs, 11 of those clubs provided feedback to council, and 7 of them had a preference to use the fees and charges process that is with inside the fees and charges. 2 of them wanted were undecided, and 2 of them looked at another process.
Thank you. So I guess in regards to when we look at the community engagement, and I know that we didn't, there was questions regarding how we did that initially in the first place. Did, I guess, we go back to the clubs and actually let them know that this was the final agreement that council had come up to, just to inform them before, I guess, coming then on to the fees and charges discussion tonight? Were they actually, because that's part of that, different models of engagement. There are models where you can go out and then not go back to the community, but good community engagement, what I see, is then you go back to the community to inform them of the decision, and then I guess it's put to council, because otherwise it could be a bit of a surprise where they go, oh, this is what's been decided and things like that. So I guess I wanted to know if that happened.
Yeah. Mr. Basham.
Through you, Chair. I haven't been involved in the community consultation process, but from speaking to officers, my understanding is, yes, that the sporting clubs have been advised that it would be with inside our fees and charges.
Great, thank you. I look forward to my fellow colleagues' comments.
Councillor Street, I think, and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Look, one of these fees and charges has been brought to my attention by a community member, and I must say I did slip my first reading of the draft. Item number 129, it's a new item, community sharps disposal. Can I get an idea of what the cost to council is for community sharps disposal each year that we're attempting to recover?
Ms. Eaton.
Missing.
Eaton, sorry.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the cost to council is approximately, I think it's $3 something per container that we purchase. It then costs us approximately $110 per bin to dispose of. I haven't got the figures on how many bins we do a year.
Okay. So I suppose my issue with the inclusion of 129 is that it's a community service that we offer. From what I've been able to gather, there's no other disposal or bulk disposal options in Kimbra, much less, I'm not sure about the Huon Valley, but it may be more broad than that. We had obviously single syringe options in public toilets and the like. But as far as I'm aware, there's no other free community disposal service. I just have some concerns on a broader community health scale about removing that free service, potentially leading to unsafe disposal and those sorts of things. It's not something that in my time on council has ever been raised as a massive cost burden on council, and I'd be really hesitant to start charging community members for that service. So I seem to be getting not many shaking heads and a few nods, so I'm going to move that number 129 be removed.
I think Councillor, Dr. Yeah. Fox had a comment. Should we hear from Dr. Fox?
That would be excellent.
Thank you, Dr. Fox.
Through you, Acting Mayor, and please, Manager of Environment Services, jump in if I'm saying something incorrect. But my understanding is that what we're charging for there is the cost of the Sharps container, not the disposal. So at previous councils that I've worked, we have charged, you know, $5 to $10 for one of those large Sharps containers that people can take away and bring back, and the disposal is free. That's a cost recovery cost, so we only charge a small amount what it costs us to supply those containers. Most, if you are provided with medication on prescription that you need to inject, often the provider of that medication, the pharmaceutical company, provides those Sharps containers to you to dispose of those needles, and you just bring them into council, and it's no cost to drop them off and be disposed of.
Yeah, that's
so this is just a cost recovery for those containers where people don't have those containers provided, and then we dispose of them for free.
Sorry, so can I confirm that it's the cost of the container, not of the disposal?
Correct.
I'm easy then.
Yeah, it says that in the spreadsheet.
Yeah, look, I did read the comment. I didn't think that it was clear that that was the...
No, it's not clear.
Further comments? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you very much, Acting Chair. Through to our Chief Financial Officer, but to yourself, have last year, how much did we increase the fees by, if at all?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Acting Mayor. So last year we raised it generally in line with our rates increase, so it was 2.8% last year. So what we do is generally that's the recommendation across the board, but we do allow each manager to go in, or we request each manager to go and have a bit of a look at the fee and just compare it across what other councils do, because for essentially for us, fees and charges do offset our rates. So the more we can collect in cost recovery and fees and charges, the less we have to charge on our rates.
Councillor Antoli.
Is it your opinion that the public got a 2.8% increase in efficiency of the services offered to them or received by them with the increase in fees?
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'm not sure I really understand the question. What I would say is our cost of charging those fees would have gone up by 2.8% or more last financial year, so it was really just cost recovery for us.
Mm. The Act clearly says in Section 205 that we don't have to actually increase the fees to recover charges. So we can choose not to, we can choose to give discounted fees, or we can choose to increase them to cover the charges. So given that we may, as a council, choose to increase rates by a percentage this year, is it fair on the community to be slugged twice, to have the fees increased at all? Because I don't see how they're getting an increase in services or an improvement in services by 5% or any percent, because we're not hiring more staff to deliver services faster. What's your opinion on that? Are we? Is that the plan, to hire more staff to deliver services faster in these areas?
Mr. Breen.
Through you, Acting Mayor. No, essentially, this is a cost recovery, so the expectation is that our costs will go up by around that 5%. We all know what inflation is doing at the moment, particularly in regards to a lot of the services that we offer. Enterprise agreement, we are negotiating that at the moment, and certainly the expectation is there will be increases of that sort of nature. So this is very much around cost recovery.
Councillor Antoli, further question?
Yeah, I just asked my colleagues to consider whether or not we are in a season worthy of increasing fees? And are our electorate getting an improvement in the services? And I personally don't see any indication for us to have to do that here, Deputy Mayor. Just because it's done last year doesn't mean it needs to be done this year. We're talking about fees. There's 150 of them. So I will foreshadow that I, based on the information at hand, won't be voting in favour of an increase in fees, and I would like that on the record for the community to appreciate.
Thank you for your contribution. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Section 10 of the fees, the Kingborough Waste Service charges, I note that some of those are above the 5%, and just interested in further information on that, whether that's to do with the waste levy or just the increase in providing those services.
Mr Breen.
Yeah, through your Acting Mayor. So essentially there'll be a lot of roundings, so have sort of a low fee, then if you round it up, it'll be 6, 7, 8%, as you can see from those. So generally, it's either that or it will be there's a particular cost that's occurring at the moment. For instance, like steel, the cost there is certainly increasing. So that's generally the reason behind it.
Councillor Bain.
Okay, and just a further one on number... Sorry about the finer details, but number 270... Yeah, 270, the court hire cost per hour. I know that the school hire has increased, but the court hire for the sports centre in general hasn't changed at all and hasn't got any GST applied against it. I was just wondering whether that's an error or if that's intentional.
Mr Breen or Ms Eaton.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I believe the GST is certainly an error. I don't have any detail on why the school hire has gone up and the sports centre court hire has not. No, I...
We take that on notice?
Yeah.
Councillor Bain, any further comments or questions?
No, that's all. Thank you.
Any other further... Councillor Dean.
I just wanted to flag that I was glad to see that actually, and I hope this will now remain the case, that the court hire hasn't gone up this year. It's definitely one that the indoor clubs struggle with in terms of covering costs over at the Kingborough Sports Centre. So for any of the ones not to be increased, I'm very glad that that one didn't get increased. I appreciate Councillor Zantoli's regard for the community, and we are in a really tough, challenging financial situation. And I say we, both council and residents as well. In this case, I do subscribe to the idea that we aren't here about improving services. This is about ensuring that we remain financially secure by, increasing as per year. And I note that the vast majority of the fees that have been increased have been increased year on year, and those that haven't been increased for a while, I note that that's why some of them potentially have a slightly higher increase of 8%. And I also thank Councillor Street for highlighting 129 because that was a really important point, I think, that we clarified there for the community. But overall, I am supportive of the recommendation as it stands.
Thank you. Any other further comments or questions? Would Councillor Midgley like to...
One more question.
One more question.
Just checking that we have absolutely double-checked all the numbers. I didn't want to go through and check that they were 5%. I'm sure it automatically calculates itself, but I can get absolute reassurance from staff they're correct figures.
Ms Eaton?
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, it is automatically generated,
yep.
So just thank you. Calculate through.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Thank you.
I have a question.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. I may have misheard Councillor Dean, but I believe he said we're not here to improve services. I'm not too sure if he meant to say that or did I mishear that?
Councillor Dean.
By way of personal explanation, Councillor Antoli, improve services by leveraging an additional 5% in line with our long-term financial plan.
Thank you. I didn't want you to have
so
eggs at your home when you got there this evening. I didn't think you wanted that on your record, so I'm glad I gave you the chance to expunge.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Yes, please. Thank you. Thanks all the councillors who asked questions and had input into the discussion and for the scrutiny of this important document. And it is difficult to sit around and to increase fees and charges, and we know that the burden does come to the community, but the burden also does come to council as well. We've seen the cost of so many items that council every day, jobs and everything's happen, and we need to be in line with that from a non-finance person, social work person, that's my thing. But, you know, I understand that. We know that all our fees and charges for so many things in the community, the school fees, different gym fees and things like that, they do change every year, and that's inconsistent with this fees and charges. During COVID, we did have relaxed year around the rates, and we have been a considerate council to the community, and we do have the community at the heart of everything we do. So it's great to hear the sentiments and the caring about that, but for this we need to have that cost recovery. Council also needs to be in a strong financial hold for the community for now and also the community for the future. So with all that, I do support these fees and charges for the 2023-2024 financial year.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. The ayes have it. Moving. I do apologise. And against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Cordova, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street and Gladewright. And against is Councillor Antoli. The motion is carried. Now moving to page 93, Financial Reserves Policy 6.15. Looking for a mover. Please, mover, Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. I note there's a recommendation on page 94. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Chair. The recommendation is to approve the financial reserve policy. Briefly, this is aimed at establishing and utilising financial reserve funds as a strategic approach to ensuring that cash is available in a timely and responsible way to fund future initiatives, managing peaks and troughs in meeting the funding of major expenditure and isolating funds contributed for specific purposes. It's important to note the different types of financial reserve that are defined in the policy. You can read about those under the definitions on page 96 of this agenda. But particularly important, I guess, to take a high-level view, is that in a changing climate, that's just one example of many where there's a lot of volatility in the system, and it is prudent to have long-term funds available in order to ameliorate financial shocks that might be coming down the pike. So as we adapt to a changing climate, we will no doubt be facing significant financial impacts as a result of, for example, higher energy weather systems that mean we have to clean up from fire and flood. This policy covers all financial reserves created by the council, including discretionary reserves, specific purpose reserves, and asset revaluation reserves. And so you can see it talks all about IT equipment replacement, hall equipment replacement, office equipment replacement, and it goes on. So taking all that as read, I think the guidelines provided within are sufficient. I think as a general idea, this promotes transparency and accountability and good financial management. So therefore, I think it's a good idea because it provides that framework for managing financial reserves to support good governance and hopefully healthy finances. And as we're about to discuss in an upcoming agenda item, it's probably more important now than ever to have such frameworks in place so that we are ready to tackle the challenges that the future may present us.
Yeah. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any other further comments or questions? No further comments or questions. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up the debate? Okay, I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, the ayes have it. Moving on to page 99, Sports Ground User Policy. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please.
Yes, sorry, Acting Mayor. I'd just like to move an alternative resolution to what's been put forward at the moment. I believe I've sent this through and it's on the screen as it reads that Council agreed to adopt...
Thank you. I'm looking for a seconder. It's seconded by Councillor Midgley. Okay. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Midgley, for seconding this. Look, I'll just briefly explain why I've added this second minor clause to the end of this resolution before I give my main contribution. I think it's important for a number of reasons that we review this policy in May 2024 rather than in 2028. First, when reviewing policies, I think it makes sense that we hear from key stakeholders. In this ground, we've got casual users, we've got obviously our seasonal tenants, and I'm not convinced that we've entirely gone out on this policy to those stakeholders this time around, but I'm not wanting to hold that back. I'm really keen for this to proceed. But the second reason I've added is that we've made a fairly big change in this policy in relation to the fees and charges that we've just previously discussed. So I think it makes sense to check in a year's time just to make sure we've got the policy settings right there. And third, there's a lot more to this policy than just the fees, which is really why this policy is before us tonight. But I think that warrants in itself taking a bit of a broader look at this policy sooner rather than later. And just in terms of my main contribution, the purpose of this report here is to sign off on an updated sports ground user policy. This policy covers a wide range of users, such as casual and seasonal users, and details matters such as tenancy agreements, insurance arrangements, seasonal periods, and also refers to other important documents like the sports ground user manual that we send out to clubs and seasonal tenancy applications. In terms of the changes to the policy, there are some minor wording changes as well, as an increase in required public liability insurance that cover that clubs need to have. The biggest change to this policy is mentioned in discussion 4.2, which highlights the new requirement for users to pay for the use of sports grounds. This came about because in March last year, Council gave in-principle support for the introduction of new fees for outdoor sports clubs, and then in May, Council signed off on a fee structure that was based around an hourly fee mechanism. Since that decision, I've obviously been quite involved in trying to secure a fee structure that I believe is better for us as council, but not only for council, but for residents and clubs as well. No doubt clubs would have preferred no new charges being introduced, but they are clearly very pragmatic and recognise council's desire to receive a contribution towards its turf maintenance costs. And so I'm pleased to have seen that council's willingness to revisit its original proposal and put forward the fee structure that is referred to by this policy here. In short, the model now provides a fixed annual fee that is tiered and based on a club's size, location and membership. This benefits us as a council because a fixed fee is far more efficient use of staff time when it comes to billing clubs for every hour and minute that one of our grounds is used. It also benefits clubs as they're operating within very limited budgets and want certainty of what they owe moving forward. Importantly too, by differentiating between club size, we can now be more confident that the likes of Bruny Island, for example, a cricket club, they've just got one team, or Channel United Soccer Club, whose players are all in primary school, they won't have to resort to huge increases in their registration costs to cover the fees listed. So the vast majority of clubs impacted by these new fees are volunteer run. We are all familiar with one or two of them personally, and we know they have usually only a handful of teams and a limited capacity to raise funds other than through registration costs and their own fundraising efforts. And so it's fair to say these clubs are already going above and beyond to give adults and children in Kimberley the opportunity to get active, stay healthy and make social connections. And so it's for this reason that we need to be very careful about introducing new charges on those clubs. The last thing I think anyone would want is to unnecessarily put up the cost of participating in community sport, especially during the current cost of living crisis. So when the fee structure that this policy refers to is put to clubs, I was glad to see, as Mr. Basham has highlighted, that it got overwhelming support. Because while on paper a few thousand dollars in a year might seem a small number, for small clubs already stretched financially, it was clear that this wasn't going to be an insignificant amount and one that could really put at risk the club's ability to provide quality, affordable sporting opportunities in Kingborough. And so finally, while I hope this policy is approved tonight, as I believe clubs need to get some certainty on this, I think it's important that moving forward we are particularly careful when putting in place such significant changes as this one. I think we need to carefully consider how we engage those groups who use our facilities. And for example, in the policy update, I'd have liked to see us let us clubs know the policy is being updated and seek any feedback. And Councillor Midgley, in an item earlier tonight, referred to this, that moving towards tonight's meeting a simple communication to let them know that we were moving towards this direction, and any last minute feedback I think would have been something that would have been really great and appreciated for clubs. Nevertheless, I've communicated with those clubs and sought any last feedback, and I'm glad to say that they are appreciative, the ones that I've heard from, and there wasn't any further to add. So that's my contribution, and I'm looking forward to hearing if anyone else has anything to say.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Further comments or questions? Councillor Midgley.
I think you've covered it, Councillor Dean, and thank you very much for your contribution and checking in regarding clubs' input to the policy, and it's great to hear that they were happy, and I also heard from a few clubs as well. I totally support that we review the policy in May 2024 because we are in interesting financial times, and so it'd be great to check in to see how it's operating and see how these things are going. The only question I had was in the policy just in regards... I haven't got it highlighted right there to the page. I think it was the public liability. Was it $10 million to $20 million? Was that the change in that? Just wondering, like, do we know any kind of implication regarding that? It's just a simple call to your insurance agency. Will there be much cost increase to that? Do we know?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Chair. I think the cost increase to that would be individual for each organisation, depending on exactly how many users they have, etc. I can confirm that in 2021, when the manual was updated and the change was made on advice from our finance manager, from 10 to 20 million, all the clubs at that point in time were advised of that change, and furthermore I've been advised today that they're in compliance as well with that 20 million insurance fee.
Thank you. And when we do, so we will then write to the clubs and let them know that the policy has changed, perhaps highlight some of the key changes. Is that correct,
Mr. Basham?
Through you, Chair. It's based on the debate around the chamber tonight. We'll definitely be writing to the clubs and advising them about the changes to the policy and highlighting those elements.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just wanted to echo everything that Councillor Dean said. I think it's a fantastic result for the clubs, and thank all the clubs for providing their input. And also noting we've also got the safety guard of the fees and charges being reviewed every 12 months where the fees sit, so that's another element that we've got an opportunity to review and get some feedback from the clubs as to how they're going with the current fees, an opportunity to, you know, go up or down there.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Any further comments or questions? Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up?
Only to thank my colleagues for their comments, and particularly for highlighting the need to communicate post this evening, and to highlight that as part of that communication it would be very important for us to respond to the question, to some of the feedback that came to us in March from clubs, and that we are very clear on certain things about, for example, that are highlighted between the differentiation of clubs and size and why those fees were differentiated. So other than that, I'm happy to sum up and say thank you.
Okay, thank you. So I'll put the alternate resolution as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? So that motion is carried. Does that... That's it? Great. So moving on to page 108, the donations policy has been withdrawn. So then moving on to page 117, the financial report for April 2023. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move, Councillor Bain, seconded. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So we have before us the financial report for April 2023. The forecast is for a finishing position of 429K underlying deficit. So I think by my calculations, it's moved about $100,000 from last month to this month. I wanted to thank the author for taking on board some feedback that I think Councillor Midgley put forward last month, and that is to have some updates in there for what's changed month to month. So there's some details in there about what's happened during April, which is fantastic, so thank you for that. I think most of the underlying deficit is similar to last month's. The one I have noted is I think there's $91,000 there to do with valuation costs, which is over and above forecast. So interested for some feedback on the valuation costs.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Mr Breen.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, so in the normal run-of-the-mill, Valuer General, they do their work and have it concluded by 30th of June. So last year we allowed for the full cost of the revaluation. Unfortunately, last year when it got through to 30th of June, they were well behind in regard to the work they were doing, and it went over for about 4 or 5 months into this financial year. So we got a bill, I think it was in March, for about $70,000. So that's sort of the main reason for that, and I guess the additional 20 shows that there were more valuations done this financial year than we expected, and the revenue accordingly is up by about $300,000.
Councillor Bain.
Yeah, just one other question if I might. The investment return from copping is also one which is quite variable year to year. So interested to know if that's potentially likely to be more and therefore reduce our deficit finishing position at the end of financial year.
Mr Breen.
Yeah, through Acting Mayor, yes, you're correct with that one. While we don't certainly have any concrete information yet, we do get a share of their tax, potential tax. So there's a tax equivalent payment made, and that's certainly looking very healthy this year, and we get 20% of the profit that Copping and CSL make. So, and my understanding is both those organisations are performing well above budget at the moment. So, yeah, it's a bit hard to tell about the quantum, but it certainly will be well over budget.
Yeah. Councillor Bain.
And so that would improve our finishing position, which is as currently forecast?
Mr Breen.
Yeah, through the Acting Mayor, yes. It's probably too early to sort of build it into the numbers yet, but the expectation would be we would get a better result than is forecast at this stage.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Any other further comments or questions? No. Councillor Bain, would you like to sum up? So I'll put the motion. There's a recommendation on page 119, or it's printed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, the motion is carried. Moving now to page 141, notices of motion. Councillor Cordova submitted a notice of motion headed Lighting at the Basketball Half Court, Kingston Park. And there's an officer's response from Mr Daniel Smee. Looking for a mover will be Councillor Cordova, and a seconder, please. Seconded, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and this should be a really quick one, I hope. If there's currently no lights, and as the officer's response says, that was a deliberate choice because it was supposed to be an aged care facility nearby. It isn't. And therefore it would make more sense to have some lights there. And I also note that even though I've framed this as helping out the basketball half court, actually it would also help out the newly installed outdoor table tennis table that was recently installed and had its grand opening on the 12th of May. So it just makes sense. There's a lot of lighting, night lighting, which actually improves safety and improves accessibility and decreases liability for council if somebody trips up. I was playing basketball there once, and there was because it's in the dark, there was a smashed television there, and I have no idea where the television came from or who had it or what was going on. But that's an example of where if there were... Does anybody know? No, I won't ask that now. Okay. But that's an example of, like, the issues and stuff that you get with littering or loitering or people causing problems are greatly diminished when you have passive surveillance and when you have night lighting. So it stands to reason that I think... whilst I acknowledge the reasoning behind you didn't want noise pollution in the initial designs, as it says in the report, and I'm really pleased to see the officer's response, which, as I read it, basically says this could easily be part of a consideration for a budget bid. Here's my quote now. So, with the lot now to be developed as residential apartments, the potential for noise complaints is still a factor, but is one that can be controlled by having lights on a timer, end quote. And so, as I put in the body of that motion there, I'm suggesting you know, after it gets dark in the wintertime, maybe up until 9 p.m. or something reasonable. We could find some reasonable compromise, I think. So what this would do, it would increase visibility, increase security, would put it in line with the rest of the park there, with the rest of the playground. And so I personally feel it's a no-brainer, and I implore you all to support it. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thanks, Councillor Cordova, for putting this forward. I was hesitant to support it, even though I totally value the basketball sport and often, you know, drive past, ride past and see many groups of people playing there, trying to get my kids to come down. They won't anymore. They're too cool. With me anyway. But I guess I look at this and think, oh my gosh, Kingston Park has had so many funds put into this area, and there are so many other communities around Kingborough that would probably like a little bit of this as well. So I guess that's sort of my hesitation in fully supporting this motion. Of course, it will go to a budget debate, so we're not saying an absolute yes in regards to that, and we're having this put forward. But I guess, yeah, that's just a bit of my hesitancy in regards to that. People might like this at Snug. They might like to play, I don't know, whatever. You know, there's so many other things around our municipality that will be worthy of this. And there's also no costing associated with it as well, which I guess would have that debate if we had, you know, I don't think we have any more budget decisions, really. We've had the community consultation, but it will be coming then to us at council. So I'm not really sure kind of when it can be added in. If it's not this year, maybe then perhaps it's something to look at next year. But again, it'd be interesting to hear from the community regarding the priorities around this type of matter.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I think the recommendation is that it's for consideration in 24-25.
Sorry, yes.
Councillor Dean, then Councillor Antoli.
Look, it pains me very much because what's been forward from Councillor Cordova is a fantastic suggestion, and I really thank him for what will eventually be put forward as a capital bid process, regardless of what happens here tonight, because there is a budgetary process that we all have, and community members or community associations have, or councillors have, to put forward capital bids. And my comments are pretty much the same as I made when the acting mayor put forward a capital bid project for Snug, is that I don't think it's the appropriate way of putting forward capital bid suggestions via a notice of motion, given that we have a normal budgetary process to be able to do that. And I would very much be hesitant to provide any additional increased public expectation that us here endorsing this tonight does make it somewhat challenging for us to then go back on that in a year's time when it comes to a budgetary capital bid workshop, given that we've kind of said this is a great idea, but we haven't got all the other bids before us right now. And so we, as Councillor Midgley has highlighted, there would be no doubt other bids that are just as great as this, and we do need to weigh them up against one another. So, again, fantastic idea, and I hope that it does get up, and it's maybe something that Councillor Cordova, we can look at the October budget, not necessarily because a year is a long way away, and it might be that there is money that comes available in October, but I just can't support the idea of each time a councillor has an idea for a capital bid that we somehow raise community expectation and jump the gun somehow to vote this via notice of motion. So, as I've always said, Councillor Cordova, if I'm not going to vote for something, I will give you my explanation. And I think I've said my piece, but I just can't support this one. Sorry.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Chair, and thank you, Councillor Dean, for basically stealing my thunder and taking almost every word out of my brain. So I probably would like to then propose a question to an officer of council staff. Is this the normal? I personally would love them to get their lights. I wish I could snap my fingers and make it happen. They deserve it. Is this the normal method that the council staff would like us to put forward these sorts of requests, or will they fairly and squarely just be captured through the budgetary process, or does this notice of motion force it or place it into the budgetary process?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Councillor Antoli, we do have an annual budget process. and as an officer, on behalf of my colleagues, we make best endeavours to provide councillors and the community with access to that process. That said, a councillor can put a notice of motion up on any matter at any time.
Right, okay. All right, thank you, because I've got a list of about 15 notices of motions on capital projects that I'd love to put up, but I probably won't submit the council to that. But I don't know how to vote. I must be honest. I'd love some contribution from someone else, because I agree with it, but I'm not too sure if by voting for it, does it create some sort of community expectation that we can't live up to? So I'm conflicted, so I wouldn't mind some assistance.
Any other comments or questions, Councillor Street?
Well, I actually think I need to be fair to you, Acting Mayor, in that I did vote against yours, despite agreeing with the tenor of the motion. I said much the same thing as Councillor Zantoli and Dean said at that point in time, which was that even though I agree with it, I have a fundamental issue with setting community expectations during this process, when we don't have the other potential capital bids before us to weigh up. And I understand that we're only submitting it to the budget process, but I'm concerned about the perception within the community that we've all sat around the table and said, this is a wonderful idea. Is it now going to happen? Well, maybe not, because we still have to weigh it against everything else that the council is going to have to do in the 2024-25 financial year. And my suspicion is that Mr. Reeve isn't entirely sure himself what we're going to be doing in the 24-25 financial year for the most part yet. So while we've got a capital works plan, these things change, and I wouldn't want to set an expectation that we are definitely going to be able to do this. So that's my only hesitation. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's great that you've brought it to our attention, but now that it's to our attention, let's consider it in the budget process.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Any Councillor Midgley?
I have a question. So during my term on council, I've seen that this is the way that things have been put, and that does ensure then that it does go into the budget process. Is that correct, or is there another way?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, just echoing the General Manager's comments, there's certainly nothing stopping councillors putting in notice of motion about any particular matter. However, in terms of a budget process, each year I would be asking councillors whether they had any particular projects they wanted to put forward. I also take notice, or my area would take notice, of any particular ones that might come up during the year. They won't have to be through a notice of motion, they could be through a council report, potentially. We'll take notice of those, plus any other ones that might be raised by councillors or the community during the year. So you don't have to wait until I send an email out there to actually provide a project forward for consideration. So it will go through that process regardless. It doesn't have to go through a notice of motion for it to get any more priority over and above you directly sending one through to me.
Councillor Midgley.
So from my understanding, it feels like there's quite a few different options and avenues to provide something into the budgetary process, and notices of motion is one, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that. Is that correct?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, that's correct. So, I mean, effectively, I understand some of the comments around the table in terms of saying I have lots of other projects I'd like to put forward as well at the same time there, and how many notices of motion are we going to put up through council there. Totally understand that, and that's why I guess I'm saying to you my preference would be that if you had particular capital projects that you had an interest in, and they can come up at any time, because it may be that you're talking to the community at any time there and becoming aware of things at any time there, what we will do is we will take those, as we would from the community as well, and we capture them as potential projects for us to consider in the next financial year, or if not in the next financial year, in future financial years. Some of them won't be priorities, but some of them will. And I guess then council ultimately gets the decision to make as to whether or not those budgets go forward or not.
Councillor Antoli.
I have a further question of, through yourself, Acting Chair. Can this issue be considered a safety issue and some sort of temporary lighting be put up from a safety OH&S budget somewhere? Is that a potential consideration?
Who would like to answer that? Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Look, there's probably a little bit more money in it. So generally when we have these projects that are put forward there in terms of actually trying to put them forward as capital projects, it means that they're, you know, over five to 10,000 normally in terms of projects, which is probably what this one may be. There is power there, but you'd probably need obviously a light standard to cover the area and also the lighting and the connection as well. You don't get much change out of 5,000 to 10,000. We don't really cover those sorts of budgets in our operational areas to actually deal with that. So it's better suited to be a capital project, which is the reason why the officers made the response accordingly here. I guess in terms of the question as to say, is this a safety issue as compared to any other area that's not lit? Not particularly. We would have a lot of, for example, footpaths around the place that we don't light, and the reason why we don't light them is because we're encouraging people not to use them during those hours where it is dark. So it's not necessarily a safety issue. Is it desirable for that use to be more open for people in darker hours? Quite possibly, but not necessarily a safety issue.
Councillor Antoli, further comments or questions from anybody? Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Well, I predicted the outcome of this debate with about the same accuracy that I shoot the basketball. I was way off. I thought it would be quick. It was not. I thought it would be straightforward. It was not. I know that my esteemed colleagues do support basketball and they do support table tennis. But it's a question of timing and process. I heard that loud and clear. It is true that playing basketball or ping pong in the dark probably greatly enhances your skills at those two sports anyway, so maybe there is some light at the end of this tunnel, pardon the pun. Look, I think the main thing is that we're all saying that it's a good idea. Well, except, no, with one caveat that we've said, OK, let's address this idea that there's too much money being spent on Kingston Park. It is a regional playground. It is not a local playground. It is not just for the residents of Kingston. It is for all of us. I live in Allens Rivulet and I avail myself of that, of the basketball court after I do the park run on Saturday. But more importantly, I see this very much as an oversight that there's lighting all the way throughout the park except in this area, and I feel like there should be lighting. Why do I feel like there should be lighting? Not only is it good for the school kids who, when it gets dark at 4:30 p.m. rather than going home and playing PlayStation, they actually have a basketball court to play on, but also I think it's a good idea because there was a smashed television there and a bunch of litter, and there's a big CCTV camera right there, and I just think if it's darkly lit, then not only is somebody, maybe they might trip over or maybe they'll just be hoodlums. Look, I just thought it was a good idea to light the park. We've already lit the rest of the park. I feel like it's an oversight to not light that part of the park. So I don't feel like this is splashing more cash around at Kingston Park. I just feel like it's fixing a problem that was an oversight. I do think it's... a lot of us have said we like the idea, but we just don't like the process. And I think that's very difficult to explain to the community that, as we've heard, we're not signing up that we're definitely going to spend the money on this. We're just saying we're going to put it not this year because that budget process is already closed. It says that in the report. We're going to put it in for next year's budget. I could, of course, have emailed a council officer, and I do really appreciate our director for pointing that out, but I didn't because I wanted to raise it, because I think it's an issue that community members who have played basketball at the courts mentioned to me, and so I thought I'd kind of pass that on. I really thought it would be very quick, and I'm surprised that this procedural bureaucratic, make sure you tick the box at the right month of the year, on the 35th of every month we're allowed to pass the thing, but not, at, you know, I just think we could easily have said yes, in principle we support, not the idea of lighting it, but we just support the idea of including it in the budget process 12 months down the road, but apparently this council can't do that. So I'm sure we can, I actually know we can, and we have before, and it would be okay had we done it tonight, but I do hear everybody's contributions, and I do respect all those contributions. I would have taken a different path myself, a well-lit path, one might say. but instead we will have to continue on in the dark. But my basketball skills will get better in the winter. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. So I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And against? We have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Councillor Cordova, Bain, Midgley and Gladewright. And against, we have Antoli, Dean, Richardson and Street. The motion is lost. We're now moving to page 142, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items. Confirmation of minutes 34.6, applications for leave of absence, Regulation 15.2H. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. This draws us to the end of open session, so thank you very much to those who are watching from home. Our next meeting is on the 5th of June. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meeting's audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned at 7:30 p.m.